Welcome to the Hoops and Howls podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network, your Minnesota Timberwolves podcast. I'm Zach Harper, joined by Sam Vecenie, our draft expert. And as you know, Sam, the Timberwolves are almost always focused on the draft because this team's never good. And they're not good again. No one could have seen this coming, that they would be bad this year. I mean, it looked like sky was the limit, and turns out the lottery is the limit. And so, once again, the Timberwolves are looking at a second half of the season where Karl-Anthony Towns is out for a couple of weeks with this wrist injury. They didn't have enough with him to win games. They don't have enough without him to win games at this point. And so they're focused on the draft. And yet, Sam, this is not supposed to be the year to be focused on the draft, because this is not a star-studded draft, right? Or is that a misconception?
No, it's not a misconception. Like, I think there's a chance that there is some depth in this class that hasn't totally been mined yet. Like, I really like the international players in this class. Like, okay. I think that there is some real upside to be had there. And I think that there's a chance that those guys are going to move up as the draft season progresses and scouts go from scouting college to scouting Europe a little bit more in April and May. But for the most part, I don't feel great about the upside level players in this class. And as Minnesota is sitting in, I believe, with the third worst record in the NBA right now. This is a class where they should not be anticipating coming away with a Karl Towns level prospect, or even like, I mean, there's a chance that there's no one in this class that turns out to be better than like D'Angelo Russell at the top of the class. Someone will be that will come from, someone will turn out to be better, right? Because even the 2013 class, right? Like Giannis is a different beast, right? Because Giannis emerged on the scene in January of his draft year and like really became a draft prospect like in April. Realistically. So he's kind of a different circumstance in 2013, but even Rudy Gobert emerged in 2013, right? Like CJ McCollum was taken at 10 or 12 or whatever, and he's a borderline all-star level player. There'll be guys that come up, but I wonder if it might not be the guys at the top. These guys at the top certainly have a high ceiling. Someone like Anthony Edwards has incredible power athletically. Someone like LaMelo Ball is incredibly creative and has a chance to be a lead ball handler, right? But you know what? The rest of, you know, there are questions about every single player in this class that could genuinely stop them from being, potential NBA stars, or in some cases, potential NBA, starters or, high level rotation players even.
Wow. Okay. So what happened to this draft class? Because I feel like maybe a year ago, it was just like, hey, LaMelo Ball, hey, Anthony Edwards, hey, James Wiseman. These are guys to keep an eye on. And then did we just get enough information? We're like, oh yeah, these guys don't have it.
No, this class has always been seen as the weak link over the course of like the 5-year period, right? Because the 2017, 2018, 2019 classes were all seen to be pretty strong, right? Like Markelle Fultz for all of the, am I allowed to curse on this podcast?
Yeah, say whatever you want.
Yeah, like all of the shit that Markelle Fultz has gone through, right? Like nobody saw that coming. Basically, you can talk to some scouts that saw him work out ahead of time. There were very few questions about Markelle Fultz. Some people saw the shot changing, but, no one saw thoracic outlet syndrome and, potential issues in terms of confidence, right? Jason Tatum, Lonzo Ball, all of these guys were considered to be high-level prospects. 2018, you have DeAndre Ayton, you have Luka Doncic, you have Marvin Bagley, Trae Young, all of these guys, maybe not in the case of Trae, but these guys were identified pretty early as elite level prospects. Jaren Jackson as well was a 5-star prospect. Last year was Zion Williamson, certainly, who everyone knew was just this incredible, unbelievable prospect, number one overall. And then people had very strong thoughts on RJ Barrett being a high level prospect early on. And, certainly Nasir Little and Cam Reddish and guys like that, they fell off the radar throughout their draft season, but they were expected to be high level prospects. In the case of the 2019 recruiting class to the 2020 class, there have just always been kind of questions. Like I remember writing about James Wiseman might have been late 2018, early 2019, and was like, this guy would just be a lottery pick in a normal draft. Like, he's the number one player in this class, and I don't know if I can sit here and tell you, like, he's a guaranteed top 7 pick in a normal class. You know, I've felt the same way about, you know, someone like LaMelo Ball was kind of a late emergence guy. Yeah. Anthony Edwards was a reclassification. He was supposed to be in the 2021 class, but was old enough to reclassify into the 2020 class. So, I mean, it's always been seen as kind of a questionable class. And I think that in many ways, the bottom has fallen out because of guys going to the NBL and then deciding to finish their seasons early, or James Wiseman deciding basically not to play at Memphis, or injuries, you know, to Cole Anthony in this case, right? The bottom has just fallen out in a way that makes it exceedingly difficult to evaluate. But even prior to it being difficult to evaluate, it was a class that had significant questions. And next year's class, by the way, is incredible. Like, I'm super excited to watch guys like Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, and Jalen Green among like the top three, Terrence Clark, et cetera, BJ Boston. Like, I think all those guys would be in the mix at number one right now, if not the outright number one pick in the case of Cade Cunningham. So I really am much more excited about that class than I am about this one.
Okay, I got one more question about this class, and then I'm going to ask you about that class. So with this class, do you think, like, I mean, you mentioned how, you know, Wiseman stops playing, LaMelo gets hurt, Cole Anthony gets hurt. Do you think there would have been enough of a significant boost to be at least more excited about this class if we saw a full season from these guys? Or was it always going to be kind of just this, we'll just wait till next year?
You know, LaMelo is interesting, because if you look at LaMelo's like last six games in Australia, he's averaging like, I think it was like 19-7-7. Like, he'd substantially improved the shooting. He'd substantially improved his overall production. I forget exactly what the numbers were. Someone correct me on that if I'm wrong. But like, he had really, really started to seemingly take a leap to where maybe if he doesn't get hurt, like, he's kind of the guy in this class. You know, Anthony Edwards has just been in kind of a bad situation at Georgia. He hasn't missed time, right? Like, it's just kind of a weird spot. Denny Avdija is a guy that's actually emerged reasonably highly over the course of the last couple of months. Killian Hayes has really gotten better since his first month and a half in Germany. But like, James Wiseman is a guy, again, that like probably was always going to be a better pro than he was college player. Cole Anthony, you know, playing at North Carolina, during his first stretch of play, North Carolina's players around him shot 25% from three, and he had zero space whatsoever to attack the basket, or even to, as soon as he even got to the elbow, teams would just collapse and double and triple team him. So there have been guys that have emerged, certainly, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think that this was always likely to be the weakest of this like kind of 5-year run. Now, did we see a circumstance where it was going to be, you know, 2013 questionable, or 2001, because that's the Stromile Swift draft, right? The 2001 class. Like, I don't think we saw that necessarily, but it's not far off of those ballparks. It probably isn't quite that questionable at the top, where like an Anthony Bennett type can rise up and go number one.
Right.
But scouts have real, real questions about where this is all going.
Okay. So, as we know, the Wolves at the deadline, they had to get Karl-Anthony Towns' best friend, so they go get D'Angelo Russell, and they move Andrew Wiggins for him, which is good, right? Like, I still think Wiggins could be a good NBA player. Like, I've never bought the negativity around him. Not saying there aren't issues, right? But I still think, like, get that guy in a place where they know how to play basketball, he will shine. Maybe not max contract shine, but he'll be good, right?
Right.
But on top of that, it's the pick that's due next year. That's top three protected. How big of a potential misstep was that by the Wolves in giving up a pick that could be anywhere from 4 to, you know, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, let's say 4 to 14 next year. Like, how big of a mistake could that end up being?
So, yeah, I think it could be a pretty big mistake. It depends on how bad you think the Wolves are going to be, obviously.
Right.
Based off of their roster right now, I don't have a ton of faith in this team being a competitor for the Western Conference playoffs next year.
That's fair.
But like, just like looking at who's ahead of them, Clippers and the Lakers are for sure ahead of them in the run. Certainly Denver and Utah, that's four. I personally think Dallas is just going to keep getting better. So that's five.
Yeah.
Houston is six.
Yep.
I mean, if Houston really blows stuff up, which is not 100% impossible, like, get rid of Mike D'Antoni, get rid of Daryl Morey, like, you know, maybe you can make a case, but I sincerely doubt it. Oklahoma City looks like it's just getting better and better right now. That's seven. Portland still has Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Yusuf Nurkic is going to get back. There's no way that they can get hit with the injury bug next year as bad as they have this year. That's eight. Golden State next year is certainly going to be better with everyone there. That's nine. The New Orleans Pelicans are just going to keep getting better. The Memphis Grizzlies are just going to keep getting better. That's 10 and 11. Sacramento has really righted the ship from the start of the season. Yeah. And has basically played 500 basketball over the course of the last, 2 to 3 months. So that's 12. And they have real young pieces that you would assume are going to keep getting better and better. Now, I think Minnesota's probably in the mix with Sacramento, with San Antonio, and with Phoenix. Right. Phoenix, again, has a similar situation to Sacramento.
They're still Phoenix, right?
Minnesota, and they're still Phoenix, and we shouldn't feel faith that they're going to put a competent product on the floor until they put a real competent product on the floor. You know, I think that you're looking at, 12, 13, 14, 15 next year, and they're going to be in that ballpark unless Gerson Rosas. I think Gerson's really good, and I think he has a chance to make some moves this summer. But, some of the guys they acquired, their flexibility is probably going to be used to retain someone like a Malik Beasley, someone like a Juancho Hernangómez. So they're in a weird spot. They're in a really, really difficult, weird spot, I think, to make that leap into the top eight of the West next year.
So what about the pick that they got from Brooklyn via Atlanta? Is that a pick like that's going to be in like the middle of the first round this year? That's not that valuable of a pick. I mean, Gerson could just be a great drafter. Who knows what Jarrett Culver ends up being, right? But like maybe he finds a gem in the middle of this coming draft, but it's not exactly like, oh, we got a mid first round pick in next year's draft. Like it's something where like they really have to kind of get lucky here.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably talking about the range of guys like Sadiq Bey, Devin Vassell, Aaron Nesmith, just to like talk about wings, because as I'm sure we'll talk about here in a minute, like, this is whenever you build your team around a point guard and a center, you need guys that can play in between them. So, I think you're talking Sadiq Bey. I think you're talking Nesmith, Vassell. You could maybe make a case that Jalen Smith could play next to Karl Towns in the front court. You could maybe make a case that you should trade up and try and get someone like an Onyeka Okongwu. I really like Tyrese Maxey a lot. I think that'd be a great pick for them. He probably doesn't get to 16 though. Same with Tyrese Halliburton, right? So, I don't love much of this draft class. I'm trying to like get excited.
Sure.
And be like, like I like it. Like I like the kids involved and I think they have some upside, but man, like you look at, even the 2019 NBA class, right? Like I'm more excited about someone like I'm not like a Chuma Okeke. He went 16 last year, but like Nikhil Alexander Walker went 17.
Yeah.
I think Nikhil Alexander Walker is like a lot more exciting. Goja Bitadze went 18. I'm a lot more excited about Goja than I am about Sadiq Bey and Devin Vassell and Aaron Nesmith.
Well, so are there if there's not like star quality necessarily, are there potential 3-and-D guys that Gerson Rosas would absolutely target in that area? Like who's the best of that bunch?
I personally, so I'm running through doing my big board right now. I am personally a big Sadiq Bey guy.
Okay.
Villanova. I have him at number Villanova. Yeah. He's 6 foot. I came into college at 6'7". That's where I currently have him listed because that's where the most recent measurement is. Some people have told me he's grown to be like 6'9". He has like a 7'1" wingspan, somewhere in that range, shooting 44% from three, something like that, averaging 15, 16 points a game. And he's, the best defender maybe in the Big East, at least the most versatile. You go back, you watch the Kansas tape. He was the guy that they felt really confident tossing on Devon Dotson to try and shut him down. And then you watch other tape in the Big East, they'll slide him down to the four, right? And have him guard bigger opponents because that's the guy they need to shut down. So I really like him quite a bit. He's not a creator with the ball in his hands. Like he's definitely someone that needs to play off of others, but in the case of Minnesota, I think that would be basically a home run for them.
In comparing him to, I don't know, someone who sounds similar just in style of play, comparing him to DeAndre Hunter, obviously he's not as good as Hunter, but like how comparable are they?
Different players. I think DeAndre is bigger and longer, bigger hands, just like kind of he's more of like a 3-4, whereas I think of Sadiq as like kind of a true wing. DeAndre, I think, probably could handle the ball a little bit better, a little bit more comfortable getting to a pull-up game. And like this stuff matters, like even though he's not going to be a creator at the NBA level, you still need to be able to put the ball on the deck and attack a closeout, still need to be able to, you know, put the ball on the deck, take one dribble to the right and knock down a pull-up jumper, right? Probably not. I mean, like DeAndre wasn't a great passer. He's probably, you know, slightly better than DeAndre as a passer, but defensively, whereas Sadiq is a really good, you know, switchable defender, I think DeAndre was kind of in a different class,
okay,
as an on-ball shutdown defender type.
Right.
You know, you're talking with Sadiq more of a similar defender to what Jarrett Culver can do, I think, maybe just a little bit. Whereas Jarrett derives a lot of value in his off-ball abilities because he's really good with hand-eye coordination, getting into passing lanes. Sadiq Bey might be a little bit better on the ball, but similar type of player that I think they're going to find the most success guarding while being versatile and being able to go up and down the lineup.
So you mentioned Jarrett Culver, like obviously that was the guy that Gerson Rosas ended up trading up for. I think they were pretty much trying to trade up for Darius Garland at the time, and then they just couldn't get the Cavs to budge, so they end up settling at six for Culver. He's been kind of a disaster offensively most of this season. He's had a couple of shining moments defensively. Like for a rookie wing, I think he's actually been pretty solid. Like is there anything where you think like they missed on Culver, or are you still high on him?
The shot is...
It's bad. The shot's bad.
Yeah. He's lost a lot more confidence in the shot than what we saw last year at Texas Tech. I've been told some things about that whole situation that I'm not going to, like... I haven't verified them, so, like, I'm not going to, like, delve into them deeply, but I still have faith in him as a shooter if he can work through that stuff. He's one of those kids that you talk to anyone around any organization he's ever been a part of, and he just like sleeps in the gym. Like he is one of those incredibly hard workers that you'll find that I think is going to be a positive locker room influence. And I think that those guys tend to get a lot better throughout the course of their careers. So he's a guy that I would bet on improving the jump shot, even though, you know, he has to get to so much better of a level for it to be viable. Right.
Right.
The comparison that I always thought of him, because I thought the jump shot was coming in at a higher level. And I still think he's a better jump shooter than what he's shown now, just in terms of upside. I always thought of him more as like a Chris Middleton type, whereas it seems like the Timberwolves and other people have thought of him as like a lead guard type.
Yeah.
Like
they've thought of him a lot as a initiator. Playmaker. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a good passer. Don't get me wrong. But like, I've always thought that he wasn't quite at the level he needed to be at to be able to play that role for a great team. So your best bet with him is moving him into more of like a secondary creator role who can knock down shots and defend really tough players. Right.
Right. Well, that's the interesting thing too, is like, I get, and they did this with Josh Okogie a little bit. And so like, I get that idea of, look, you gotta get used to shooting these shots because these are the shots you're gonna take for us, right? But like 40% of his shots are three pointers, and he's a 28% three pointer. Like, is there a certain point where that's like detrimental in your mind, where they need to find a happy medium to build his confidence?
I think we're at the point now where they just ride with it and do what they've been doing. Just try and give them as long of a leash as they can and let him work through his issues and get as much experience as they can. And then send him into the off season with a plan and like hope that he works with the right people and he has great people around him. So I think that that's not going to be a problem. I think I'd just let it roll. You can make a case that earlier in the season, maybe it would have been a little bit better to have him in a different role. But for now, with where they are, I'd just keep letting it ride.
All right. Before I let you go, Karl Anthony Towns, obviously one of the most talented big men in the league, but there's some issues, right? And so I think one of the funniest things about his defensive deficiencies, especially in the Tom Thibodeau era, you haven't heard as much since Thibodeau was bounced out of the organization, but is that whenever presented with like, hey, we're going to do this on defense, he would respond with, well, that's not how we did it at Kentucky. We did this, right? And like, I wonder, like, is he the biggest embodiment of that writing for Kentucky? Or is that like every player at this point? We're like, well, we did it this way at Kentucky. Where it's like, no one gives a shit what you did at Kentucky. Like, this is the NBA.
Yeah, people got real excited about like his rim protection numbers at Kentucky. Meanwhile, when you like delve deep into the numbers, so what? He was a member of the 38-1 Kentucky team in 2015. Yeah. He was fouling at a prodigious rate. I want to say that like up until the tournament, like it started to drop off in the tournament, but whenever he started to play more, because he just kind of had to lay off a little bit more, he was fouling at like 6 fouls per 40 minutes or something like that in college. And I just always am a little bit concerned about those type of players. I mean, like if I'm trying to build a team around Towns, I'm trying to get as many good wing defenders, perimeter defenders as I can so that I can reduce the burden on him as a rim protector. I can find a way to minimize the issues that he has portrayed so far. And, you know, early in the season, he showed flashes of being useful. Yeah. He was not terrible to start the year. Like I talked about it quite a bit. I thought he was actually pretty good as a rim protector to start the year. And, you know, I think it gets pretty tough in regard to, trying to build a team around him and D'Angelo Russell because of how sieve-like Russell is. And right. When you have two of those guys, it gets
Especially tricky. Especially the point of attack, right?
At the point of attack, yeah. Exactly. Because you're just going to run 1-5 ball screens constantly. Like, you know, that's the easiest ball screen scenario for opposing teams to run.
Right.
You know, if your weak spot is at the, you know, 2 on defense, it takes a team a little bit out of their comfort zone with what they want to do offensively to run like a 1-2 ball screen, right? But with it being the 5, you just don't have to change up what you're doing, and it gets complicated, I think. So if I'm Minnesota, the funny thing is, like, I really wonder if they knew that they were going to get D'Angelo Russell on trade deadline day, I wonder if they would have completed the Robert Covington deal the night before. Because Covington is kind of the perfect player to put in between those two. He's a great off-ball defender. He can really help, tag rollers to the basket when Towns gets lost in no man's land. He's really good at creating turnovers. He's really, really good just in all help scenarios. So that's kind of like the planning / missed opportunity thing that I look at for them and, you know, kind of wonder if they would have gone down that pathway had they known that they were getting D'Angelo Russell.
It's a fair question. I think there were some concerns about Covington's health moving forward, but it couldn't have been. I know it's not that bad. Look at what he's doing in Houston. All right, last question for you, Sam. The Minnesota Timberwolves are guaranteed the number one pick this year. Who is the best fit for them?
I would take Anthony Edwards. I know that there's some overlap there with D'Angelo Russell. I would take Anthony Edwards and hope that he becomes a star. But, you know, there's been a lot of the same questions about Anthony Edwards as you talk about with Karl Towns and talk about with D'Angelo Russell in terms of these guys are often perimeter players that, you know, don't necessarily do the dirty work type things that you need to often win ball games. So a lot of the guys at the top of this class, though, are, you know, similar. Like, no one's going to confuse LaMelo Ball as like a grit and grind type of defender, right? James Wiseman, you're just not taking a center. I think that you can maybe make a case for Denny Avdija, but I'm probably not going that route. And like, Obi Toppin is just not a number one overall pick in a draft, really, like talent wise. So yeah, they're in a tough spot, I think, at number one, to where I would be. I've said this throughout the entire draft, like I would be looking to move picks in this draft. I would not want to take a player in the 2020 draft.
Damn. Well, that is depressing for the Timberwolves.
let me rephrase. There are certain players at certain spots that I would want to take. And I'm sure that there are opportunities that will arise within the draft where, you know, those players are on the board and I'll be like, that was a great pick, but I'm not super enthused about selecting any of these guys at number one.
So best case scenario is we're here a year from now saying, wow, the Wolves are terrible. It looks like they're going to have a top 3 pick and keep their pick. Who are they taking? Right. That's the best case scenario for the Wolves, it sounds like.
Yeah. Cause Cade Cunningham would be the perfect guy.
He's legit.
Put in between, D'Angelo Russell and Carl Anthony Towns. And the funny thing is that, like, Cade Cunningham turns 19 in 2020, which means if he would have graduated early and gone to Oklahoma State like he was planning to, because his brother's there as a coach or on the staff somehow, I think he's an assistant now, you could have very easily seen a circumstance where there's a real number one overall pick in this draft. But yeah, he decided to stay at, I believe he's at Montverde, and not go down that path.
Well, Timberwolves fans, we'll do this again next year, it sounds like, and hopefully there will be better luck for the Wolves. Sam, when does the next big board drop?
It'll be out. I think we're scheduled for Thursday.
Awesome.
I'm just making calls today and trying to finalize an order. So after that, we'll be good.
There you go. Check it out on The Athletic. Sam Vecenie, one of the best in the business. Sam, thanks so much.
Anytime, Zach.